Chapter 11, rant music.
In these continuing times of confused intensity and marginally baffling debates, we need a different voice of sanity from someone else who has an alternative angle, a new perspective on the Johnny Moped story, an insider, perhaps, maybe even someone who shopped at Sex and modelled the rubber outfits and lived the punk rock dream. Re-enter one, Marco Francesco Andrea Pironi, blown into London town in the mid-70s, on the raging suburban breeze all the way from Harrow in Middlesex. As we meet him drinking shivers at the bar of Groucho's Club, Marco, it is fair to say, does not come across as a man who ever sat going round and around on the Circle Line weeping tears of frustration at his lack of musical opportunities. Indeed, if we suspect, we aren't ever going to be sure about moped status in the punk rock firmament. We can safely say that Marco was definitively lurking at the dark heart of the matter. This, least we forget, is the man who played guitar in the Banshees' dramatic debut at the 100 Club Punk Festival in 76, with Sid Vicious on drums, Dave Burke catnapping in the audience, and all of 72 Hours Notice. Marco comes out with a great observation about how even a pro band would struggle to get a set together in 3 days, let alone a bunch of absolute amateurs struggling to learn how to plug in the Clash's backline in a Camden rehearsal space. I love the idea of doing Captain Scarlet, but I couldn't work it out. It was too hard. But Sid was really good, to be fair, he says thoughtfully. We thought we were doing Sister Ray and being very clever, but it wasn't very clever at all. You've got to remember, I was 17. In Susie and the Banshees, the authorised biography, Marco is found musing over those nascent glory days of hanging with the Bromley contingent. I didn't really understand the dynamics between Susie and Severin. When I first met them, I wasn't sure if they were an item. They weren't touchy-feely, but then for them to come along holding hands in those days would have been disgusting. They had attitude, we all had attitude. That's how we came together. The people in the scene weren't necessarily friends. We didn't necessarily even like each other. It's just that we hated each other less than we hated the rest of the world. In some ways then, the hapless charming mopeds were like the anti-Banshees, feigning fury at the filth spewing out around them. In a million other ways, Marco was definitively the anti-Johnny Moped, not least because of the subsequent success, the moolah and the shivers he now swills around. In the swanky private members club, rather smartly post-Banshees, he posed in the Models and Rima Rima before joining Adam and the Ants, as they made the leap from art house outsiders to mainstream. Smash hits, smashing stormtroopers. Thanks, in a no small fateful part, to the ever cunning Malcolm McLaren stealing the original Ants to build Bow Wow Wow in 1980. This is a man who co-wrote two top 10 albums in the shape of Kings of the Wild Frontier and Prince Charming. This is why he can now afford to be cheerfully grouchy in the plush velveteen shadows of Groucho's on Dean Street, within slinky distance of the 100 Club, where we're going to see Johnny Moped play, because Marco has never seen Johnny Moped play live before and is intrigued to see what the fuss is or was all about. And make no mistake, Marco Pironi is very much a man who understands what a big fuss is all about. Having lived in the eye of the crazed tribal pop hurricane that was Ant Mania, we didn't give a shit about credibility. We wanted to be really famous and we wanted to have a really big bloody house. And we wanted loads of money and really good clothes and cars. It was all completely natural. I was protected by bodyguards and chauffeurs and I just lived in this bubble, which was a very nice place to live, actually. I really don't want to have any interaction with the general public and I still don't. So yeah, it felt all right. I'm not shy and retiring. I'm just a snob. Marco is spending the night at Kettner's just around the corner. Hint, if you have to use Google to find out what Kettner's is, you can't afford to stay there because he's moved out of London. He used to live it up in Mayfair. It wasn't quite Mayfair, he corrects us gruffly. It was that bit near Gloucester Road and Selfridges. Did you go to the food hall though? Oh, I'd shop there all the time. Why did the ant maniacal screaming end? It's difficult to explain at a bar, but I think he, Adam, wanted more out of it than I did. He suffers from that performer's thing where he needs people to love him. I don't have that. I'm not a performer. I'd rather people didn't love me. We are now necking bottles of Peroni with Mr. Peroni. He happily explains how he loved working out how to wind up an already fairly volatile music press back in his heyday. I didn't care what the enemy thought. There was one night in bed when I was literally thinking, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? After Kings of the Wild Frontier, and then I got it. Panto. They really hate that. That's the great thing about Panto, is that the audience is really young. Yeah, and the great thing about 10-year-old fans is they can't come to the shows on their own. They have to bring a friend, and they have to bring parents. So instead of selling one ticket, you're selling four. Oh, hang on a minute. Marco has just remembered something else. I have seen Johnny Moped, he shouts, suddenly over the rattle and thrum of the barman's cocktail shaker. I remember Ray got up on stage and he said, he's more mysterious than Mrs. Witten's disappearance. Now, I know that's a reference to Crossroads, which I never saw at the time. I thought he was fucking awful. He was like a complete outsider, but he could get up on stage and do his thing. I had the bootleg cassette, which was really fun. I didn't think they were very good, but that didn't matter. People didn't have to be good. They just had to be different. They had to be interesting or funny, which he was. I mean, any fucking band can be good, but can they be funny? We mention that Johnny was described as odd in England's Dreaming. Marco is incredulous. Odd? No, he was completely out there, completely out there. He wasn't cool in any way. He wouldn't know how to be. For me, anything that wasn't cool was really odd. Because I came from the King's Road and the sex shop and all that. And suddenly there were these people who weren't from the King's Road, who weren't from the shop, and these people had the wrong clothes and they were doing things wrong. Back then I was outraged that people didn't have the right clothes, but now I can see how great that was. This is actually high praise indeed from Marco, a man never afraid to scowl into his scotch tumbler and call a spade a sodding bloody spade. He was there for the good times at the Roxy. He was there for the bad times too. I saw Sham 69's first gig and it was just embarrassing. There was Jimmy Percy in his Hawaiian shirt and shorts. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I'm not sure what's happening here. I'm going to go home now. I don't understand this anymore. We were doing an Ants gig at the Music Machine. And Piggy, a model from Sex, turned up and gave Jordan a copy of Trans Euro Express. And I'd never heard Trans Euro Express, but at that point I knew that punk was over, he says flatly. I just knew it couldn't last. It could only be exciting for 3 months, and if you keep going on with it, then you're just digging yourself into a grave. He does have one thing in common with Team Moped, though. Like a lot of the other characters in this book, Marco Peroni's pivotal music forming years were in the early 70s, sat in front of the box on Thursday evening, when songs were proper songs and men were proper men, albeit merrily slathed in copious quantities of Mary Quant. It was Ferry or Bowie. There was no one else, he seethes defiantly. I mean, in 72 or 73, what else would you buy apart from Ferry or Bowie? Marco recalls seeing Bowie at Hammersmith Odeon when he was 13. They did Space Oddity and they had a mirror ball. I'd never seen a mirror ball before. 8 years later, he was living the Top of the Pops dream himself, the rugged Ronson to the Ants preening frontman. Curiously, alongside them for a while was Peachface bassist Gary Tibbs, who'd actually joined the Ants from a later Roxy Music lineup. The band, they were such massive fans of them a decade earlier. Now that's one weird full circle completed. Are you still in touch with Gary Tibbs, we idly wonder? I was barely in touch with him when he was in the fucking band,